Welcome to the Clemson Dubcast, Thursday, February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day to everyone out there. Been a busy week at TigerIllustrated.com and elsewhere. We have begun our pre-spring football primers, in-depth look at each position. As they get ready to start practice, I guess, less than 2 weeks from today. Hard to believe that's already around the corner, but we have already taken a deep dive into the running backs and the linebackers. So check that out at TigerIllustrated.com. Also, plenty of great recruiting coverage, as usual, from Paul Strelo, who happens to have been a recent guest on the Dubcast. And boy, Paul's a popular guy. At last check, the downloads for that were the second most of any of our guests of the Clemson Dubcast. So good stuff there. Also, earlier than anticipated, the book, Dabo's Dynasty, Clemson's Rise to College Football Supremacy, is out. I believe it's in bookstores in the upstate and elsewhere. Also, I have some that are available for autographs and personalizations, inscriptions, all that stuff. You can go to clemsonfootballbooks.com for more information on that. I tell you what, I had 100 that were shipped to me late last week and earlier this week and blew through those. Got plenty more orders to come. Got several hundred more on the way. Should arrive later today, and so going to resume the shipping process tomorrow, Friday. So those of you out there who have placed orders and who have yet to see notifications of them being shipped, just a little bit of patience, and we'll have them out there to you in short order. So really appreciate all the interest in the book and all the support. Title sponsor of the Clemson Dubcast, Parham Smith and Archenhold Law Firm in Greenville. Very happy to have them aboard. Couldn't do it without them. Blake Smith and Brooke Archenhold, both Clemson grads, both huge fans. Forte of their firm is medical negligence. They represent patients and their family members in medical negligence actions. They also handle all sorts of other complex personal injury litigation. I can vouch for them. About 10 years ago, a family member had a pretty serious medical situation with one of the local hospitals, went to Blake Smith, and he very quickly and authoritatively gave us some great advice, and we were very thankful for that. Parham Smith and Archenhold offers free consultations. Give them a call, 864-990-4581 or parhamlaw.com. Business owners in the upstate and beyond, I want to tell you about Tandem Payment, based right here in the upstate, changing the face of payment processing. Office is located throughout the southeast. One of the owners of the Greenville location, 2005 Clemson grad. If you're a business owner, you know how painful it is to get the weekly phone calls from the national processing companies promising, quote, the lowest rates in the industry. Tandem approaches this part of it completely differently, face to face. The newest program they offer is called Cash Discount. You can eliminate up to 100% of your annual credit card processing fees. The best part of it is it encourages more cash transactions inside your business, plus you save the typical processing fees you pay annually. Call Tandem today to learn more about how to eliminate your credit card processing fees. 864-672-1570. That's 1570 or TandemPayment.com. All right, let's get to our interview. By popular demand, Mark Packer, the Pac-Man. Quite a few of y'all on the TI message board have requested him, so we aim to please. He's actually been on our list for quite a while. Fun conversation, so here we go. Hope y'all enjoy. All right, joined by Mark Packer, the Pac-Man. Really appreciate you joining the Dubcast, Mark.
Larry, always a pleasure.
So the last time I saw you was very late at night, I guess Eastern time, pretty late Pacific time, in the bowels of Levi's Stadium. Almost all the reporters had gone and were writing their stories and filing their reports. I think it was you. I think it was Andy Staples was hanging out, maybe Max Olson. You had your microphone and equipment and were sort of camped out outside the locker room. First of all, give us a window, listeners, a window into, you know, several hours after the game, you're still hanging out. What are you looking for? Are you waiting on a scheduled interview, a spontaneous interview? Take us into that process.
Well, so it was a little bit of everything that morning, technically, I guess it was, as you said. It was past the deadline time, and we were still on the air on SiriusXM doing the post-game show. And I told the guys midway through the fourth quarter, I said, listen, just like it was a couple years ago, we were able to get Dabo Swinney and Deshaun Watson. And so I was just going to hang out and get as many interviews on the field and afterwards as possible. So we were still live on the air doing interviews and recaps with our cast of thousands that we brought out to the Bay Area. And it, obviously we'd gone off the air after a couple hours post-game show, and I still had a chance to get Christian Wilkins and want to talk to him, and Cleve Farrell and Justin Ross. So we got all those guys even off the air, but we were able to replay it the next morning. And I kept, you know, looking for Dabo because I knew that we were going to do an interview with him, but I hadn't been able to find him. And so he had already done his press conference and so forth. And some folks were like, Pack, I think he's in the locker room. And so I went in the locker room and everybody cleared out, so he wasn't there. And so I was kind of roaming the hallways, the bowels of the stadium at Levi's there, looking for Dabo, and we couldn't find him. And again, I don't know what time it was. It must have been 2 a.m. or whatever it was. And I said, man, he's got to be somewhere. So by just happenstance, I walked back through the tunnel, back onto the field. And sure enough, there's Dabo holding court on the 25-yard line, dressed in confetti. And, you know, obviously the biggest smile. And his family was out there, and they're taking a bunch of pictures. And he's yelling at me, Pack, where you been? I've been looking for you. I'm like, yeah, you haven't been looking for me very hard. I've been looking for you. So we conducted a 10 or 15-minute interview. You know how Dabo is. He's asking two questions, and next thing you know, a half an hour goes by. But it was kind of surreal, again, to be having that same kind of interview with him 2 years after the fact when, you know, Hunter Renfro makes the catch in Tampa and Clemson Nation goes bonkers. I thought the stadium was going to fall down that night. And, you know, holy mackerel, Clemson's on top of the mountain. And all, here we are, fast forward the clock 2 years later, and Clemson had just completely demolished the greatest team in the history of Alabama football. And, you know, here's Dabo standing out there, and, you know, there's nobody in the stadium, and you're having a conversation with him, and he looked as fresh as a rose. You know, he was just like ready to go. You know, he's not going to sleep for 2 days on the high with the way his team played. But it was really kind of surreal to talk to those guys, and especially the guys that came back. I thought that was the thing that was the most interesting of that night. That you know, you talk about, you know, with a guy like Christian Wilkins and what he's accomplished, not only in the classroom and getting his degree, multiple degrees. Could have gone and made a gazillion dollars in the NFL, but said, no, you know, I love Clemson. I want to come back. I want to play. We got some unfinished business. But Austin Bryant and all those guys to come back and to close out the deal going 15-0. And like I said, just beating up on Alabama the way they did. It was really a remarkable night and really a remarkable journey.
It's funny you mentioned encountering Dabo out on the field as he's got confetti all over him. I continued to camp out outside the locker room and was having various conversations with people who had already showered and dressed and were headed back to the buses. Dabo obviously was way behind that schedule. But Reggie Merriweather, the former Clemson running back who is now the radio sideline reporter, comes up and he says, hey, man, you got to see this. He was out on the field when Dabo and his family were doing the confetti angels on the turf, and he got video of it. And I'm like, dang it, how did I miss that? I mean, it's chaos in the post game. There's no method to it. You're just trying to position yourself in the best possible place to see something, or in your case, to get an interview. And so I said, Reggie, can you send that video to me? I'll give you credit. He said, no, I don't want any credit. He sent it to me. So I tweeted it. And I mean, those priceless moments after, you know, a national championship like that, those are what endure. You know, that's what, as a reporter, as I'm sure you'll agree, I mean, you'll remember that forever, encountering Dabo at midfield, as opposed to had you never seen him, it sort of feels a little bit incomplete, I guess, as an observer. Am I correct?
And that is true. And I'll tell you another story, too. When I got done interviewing Dabo at that particular time, and I saw the Snow Angel thing going on, it was funny. But there were some workers at the stadium that were basically tearing the place down and doing all that stuff. And they saw Dabo from a distance. Now, Dabo wouldn't know those folks from a man on the moon. And a couple of guys yelled over, "Hey, Dabo, congrats," and all that stuff. And Dabo's like, "Hey, come on, man, let's get a picture." And so he rounded up the whole group. And again, you got to keep in mind, it's 2:30 in the morning, right? I mean, you know, and he's out there with his family, and he's got all these guys. It must have been, I don't know, 10 or 15 men and women breaking down the stadium and taking down signage and stuff. And he's there in the middle of them taking a picture. And I just turned around and said, "That right there is why the guy resonates with people. That's why he's such a great recruiter. He's such a gregarious people person that he never met a stranger. He sees everybody, wants to shake their hand, know what they're doing and all that stuff." And again, I couldn't be happier for him and his staff and his players and the fans, because he is a special, special dude. There's no question about it.
You've been around a lot of coaches in through your job and otherwise, but have you ever seen anybody like this who, like you just said, who's going to pose with the cleanup crew and also with a media member, even one he knows, you know, a coach knows? Most coaches aren't going to be like, "Oh, Pat, where you been, dude?" You know, I mean, it's just totally different from anybody that you've ever encountered.
I think all coaches are different. I mean, you know, everybody kind of, I think, steals from the other guy in some respects, but what is genuine about him, and this is what I think makes him so unique, he is one of the full-souled individuals I've ever met, in terms of he just truly wants to get the best out of somebody, even if he doesn't know them. He wants to know their story. He wants to find a positive. And, you know, I've been around some people that you just kind of go, you know, that dude right there, he's different. That guy's got something that somebody else doesn't have. It's a short list. You know, and some coaches like to put up walls and they don't want you to be part of the inner circle. Dabo was like, "Man, forget the wall, man. I want everybody to have some fun with us. So let's come on with the ride." And, you know, I know the word for him last year was joy, which is really the perfect word, I think, for Dabo Swinney and the way he conducts his business and the way he treats people. It's kind of a perfect match. And, you know, I just hope that Clemson fans understand and totally have a comprehension of how important he is for what this whole run has been, because you're watching something incredibly special. And it doesn't always happen at institutions. I mean, certain places maybe get a guy, like, for example, I'll use Alabama. They've had this great run with Saban. They've had this great run with Bear Bryant. They've had spikes with the Gene Stallings of the world where you go, "Man, those are great coaches." This is a unique era right now taking place at Clemson with this football program, and the institution has had a trickle-down effect to the academics. You will drive around Clemson, you see everything being built. The guy is a special, special dude. And I just hope people understand it and appreciate it while they're watching this whole thing take place.
You've encountered, I'm sure, a lot of Alabama fans as well. And you mentioned, you know, the need for Clemson fans to truly savor what's going on. And I think the large majority of them unquestionably do. This is still kind of a blissful time for them. But Alabama fans, I don't want to say spoiled, but maybe a little bit indifferent, a little—I guess probably not the word, but just a little cold to the routine of going to the playoff and winning all these championships. Do you think there's a danger on the part of the Clemson culture, the Clemson fan base, of getting to that point, or are we just talking about two different cultures entirely in comparing Alabama's and Clemson's?
I think that any fan base, and I don't care if we're talking Clemson or Alabama or the Patriots or the Golden State Warriors. I mean, you go down the list of franchises and academic institutions and sports that have had unbelievable runs. I think that's always a concern, especially in this day and age where you just assume that, hey, we're going to be in the college football playoff, or hey, we're going to go to the Final Four, or hey, we're going to win a World Series every year, or win the Super Bowl. You know, I think that's a problem everywhere, that you just assume that, hey, we're that good and that's just the way it's going to be. It's hard to do. It's hard to win one, much less multiple, much less stay there for a decade, or what Tom Brady's doing with the Patriots and say, hey, we've won six of these. And I mean, you got to savor what you're watching as being special, because it doesn't happen to everyone. It is a unique scenario that's taking place. So I would call, you know, I would warn everybody in that department. And, you know, it won't take long. It wasn't that long ago, for example, that Alabama was a team at some point in time this century that folks didn't mind playing on homecoming because you knew you're going to wear them out. And that seems like that was a million years ago. It wasn't that long ago that Clemson football was a 7-5, 8-4, 6-6. You know, it got the reputation, hey, we were really good 25, 30 years ago, but really, what have you done? I mean, it can fall back into that if you just start to assume that that's what it is all the time. I mean, you got to really appreciate when you're watching great stuff take place, whether it be an individual, a coach, a coaching staff, a team, or whatever the case may be. So, you know, I just would warn everybody in that department that, hey, what these coaches and players are doing is hard. It's tough to win one, even harder to stay there when you're taking everybody's best shot. So, man, enjoy it while it lasts, because it will not last forever. Will not.
I was a guest on Chris Childers' show the day after the game on the SEC channel. Chris and I believe it was Jacob Hester. Chris advanced a theory or a position that I respectfully but totally disagree with, in that, hey, what happened in Santa Clara gives hope to the rest of the SEC and others that, hey, Bama's not invincible. It can be done. And my response to that was, yeah, a pretty simple recipe. Just go get one of the best quarterbacks in college football history, equip him with some of the best receivers in college football, and then, oh, by the way, throw in one of the best defensive lines in college football history. What is your take? Like, my belief is that this is only going to continue with Clemson and Alabama being the class of college football, just because they're recruiting so well, possibly Georgia in there, maybe one or two others. But how do you think, if this does continue, this will be received by the general college football populace?
Well, listen, Bama and Clemson, to their credit, deserve to be and get all the accolades that come their way. I mean, they've earned it. They've proven it on the field. Everybody else is trying to be these two teams. And that's true whether we're Georgia or Ohio State or Penn State or Michigan, or fill in the blank with your favorite, hey, we're as good as those guys theory. But you got to go earn it. And, you know, to my knowledge, when you got Nick Saban and Dabo Sweeney running these respective programs, I don't believe they're just going to chill out, wait, let everybody catch up. So you got to go catch them. So that's why I would agree with your position as opposed to Chris's position that, hey, you've got the blueprint. Yeah, you got the blueprint, but now you got to go find the dudes. And, you know, and the thing that, you know, the other thing I thought you were going to say that mental fatigue and I didn't want to be there was going to come into play. And I'm so sick of, yeah, I'm so sick of hearing that nonsense. I can't see straight. But hey, it's like I said, this is not easy to do. And again, I have an appreciation for how great Nick Saban has been for this extended period of time and what Dabo has built and been able to maintain. It's amazing to watch them at work and go about it in a really kind of a different way. But at the end of the day, there's so many similarities, and that is you have to have great players and they have to also buy in, and you've got to develop them. And, you know, I went through a whole thing the other day about recruiting rankings. We know where Alabama has been basically number one the whole time, but you know, you don't find Clemson in the top five in recruiting classes. So the point of it is, hey, you still got to get good players. There's no doubt about that, but you've got to develop them. And that's what Dabo and Nick have done, I think, better than anybody else. So in the big picture of college football, I think it would be healthy for the sport if it was more than just one and one A, but you know, for that to happen, hey, guess what? Southern California, Washington, Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, Georgia, Texas, Oklahoma, Florida, Florida State, y'all have to get better because the other two dudes are not going to put it in neutral. So, you know, I guess for the health of the sport, it would be great if we really got a sense that, hey, maybe 5 or 10 teams could win the national championship. But until proven otherwise, you would just have to assume that, hey, unless something crazy happens, Bama and Clemson have a pretty good opportunity to maybe see each other a few more times coming down the road.
It's so funny. The week before the game, the championship game, was dominated by talk of Alabama-Clemson fatigue, like fatigue over the matchup again. And then at some point, I don't think it was the day after the game. I think it was more like a week later or so, week and a half, where all of a sudden this narrative started coming out. I think Josh Jacobs mentioned it on an NFL network interview. And then Mike Griffith, the writer covers Georgia football for the Atlanta Journal Constitution. He was really bullish on that notion that Alabama just was, man, they were just too fatigued from that grind of an SEC schedule to give their best against Clemson. What in the world is this? And did you hear it from any other corners, I guess?
I stopped listening, to be honest with you. And I'm dead serious. It's one of the lamest Loserville approaches I've ever heard. And the perfect example of this would be, had Alabama won 44-16, would anybody be having a conversation? Wasn't it amazing that Alabama would be able to win that game by four touchdowns as exhausted as they were? I mean, it's the dumbest thing I have ever heard. And all this, I'm tired of watching Alabama Clemson. Well, you know what? I'm not tired of watching the two best teams in any sport play. I mean, I'll say it again. What did you want to see happen here? Do you want to put Notre Dame in there? I mean, put whoever you want, but they're not better than Alabama, and they're not better than Clemson. And that was proven this whole entire year. So, you know, people just come up with stuff to throw up against the wall and hope it sticks. But as soon as I heard mental fatigue and I didn't want to be there, I seriously zoned out everything else. Like, hey, if you really believe that, you are in Loserville, because these are the two best teams. And believe me, they were ready to play football. It just so happens on that given night, Clemson was four touchdowns better than Alabama. End of story. Now, what does that equate to what's going to happen in 2019? It does not. But all this excuse, hey, there's a reason Team A is better than Team B. And that's why we play. But all that other stuff is pure garbage. I mean, it is total nonsense.
Yeah, you tweeted on February 10th, I guess 4 days ago, as a lifelong Atlanta Legends fan, I refuse to believe that Orlando is 34 points better. I'm not saying we were outcoached. I think it has more to do with the club having mental fatigue, or perhaps we just didn't want to be there. AAF rules.
No, I mean, I was kind of taking a shot at all the idiots that believe that nonsense. And I couldn't listen. If you said, Pack, I'll give you $1 million if you can name one player on the Atlanta Legends team, I'd say, you know what, Larry, that million stays in your pocket. I couldn't even tell you who the coach is, but I had to put that tweet out there because it was almost as asinine as all the nonsense I've been listening to for the last month, which I toned out and just went, hey, you guys come up with something better than that. I mean, you got to come up with something better than that excuse. And those two teams are really good. They're loaded with NFL dudes. And Clemson that particular night, when it mattered the most, put on a show for a lifetime. And that's, I mean, to the victor goes the spoils, and that's what we got.
This SEC Kool-Aid thing, I mean, look, I love the SEC. I mean, it's the most serious football conference there is. You know, there's been a lot of great football. They won seven straight BCS titles, so plenty of respect is due to that conference. But how do you... to what do you chalk up this, I guess, legion of excuse makers that I mean, whatever result happens that doesn't involve the SEC winning, it seems like there's just a litany of excuses at the ready.
I don't know how to answer that question. I think the SEC football is the standard by which everybody is measured. You know, most of the years they have been the best league. Some years they're not. I mean, I think a couple of years ago when Clemson won the first first national championship back in 2016 in terms of this run. I know they won in 81 when I was in school. But I thought the ACC that year, top to bottom, was the best conference. Now, you know, for every one of those I give you, I'll give you five SEC or 10 SEC years that's the best league. I think they are the standard by which everybody in the country measures, hey, how good are you? And again, Alabama gets all the credit in the world with what they've accomplished. Auburn won it. Again, the BCS era, nobody was in the neighborhood of what the SEC was doing. But, you know, now that since we've joined this college football playoff, you know, Bama's won a couple, Clemson's won a couple, Ohio State's won one. And I would tell you that if you look up the records head-to-head during the college football playoff era, you're going to find that the Atlantic Coast Conference has a winning record head-to-head against the SEC. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, oh, by far the ACC is better than the SEC in football. I don't think it is. But on a certain year, can it be? Sure it can. on a certain year, can they have a better team than the SEC's better team? That's been proven already twice. I think the SEC is the standard, but again, to their credit, they deserve that because of the commitment the schools have made. They got great fan bases. They put together great teams and a number of players that go in the NFL. That's all been proven. But the excuses come across as sour grapes. I mean, just because you've made the commitment and you're really, really good doesn't guarantee that you win it every year. In fact, it's been proven that you don't win it every year. So it's kind of where I am. It's kind of like all ACC basketball. You know, we could look back in the glory days of the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and even the parts of the 90s of ACC hoops when Duke and North Carolina and Virginia and NC State and all that stuff's going on. Hey, you still got to go earn it. And while the ACC could be the standard in hoops, not every year is it the best conference. And not every year do you win the national championship. But I'll tell you what, a lot of times they will be sticking their nose in everybody's business. And that's kind of how I feel about SEC football, much like I feel about ACC hoops. So, but the excuses are lame. I mean, it's just after a while, you do this long enough, you start laughing to see who can come up with the most creative excuse. Hey, the excuse is called scoreboard. You either win or you lose. And that's the bottom line.
Yeah. I mean, the SEC can be a grind, but it's not a grind by definition. The ACC was not good this past season, but it's not bad by definition. I mean, you mentioned 2016. That Clemson schedule they had that year when winning the national championship, that was brutal.
Sure was.
At Auburn, that Lamar Jackson Louisville team that was so good on offense, at Florida State, which I think was top 12 at the time. Pittsburgh, of course, was pretty good. And then Virginia Tech, Ohio State. I mean, they didn't have to apologize to anybody that year, nor did they have to this year after beating Alabama by four touchdowns. Wondering, you know, this run Clemson is on is very similar to Florida State in the 90s after they joined the ACC. Wes Durham and I talked about that on a recent podcast. Back then, by your recollection, did Florida State get dinged as much for being a part of a supposedly inferior conference?
I don't know if they got dinged because Bobby Bowden's teams were so great where they were able to win a couple national championships in the 90s. But what I do remember, though, Larry, is I thought the Florida State teams of the 90s did change the ACC because they brought the element of speed to the point where they were so far advanced than everybody else in the conference that everyone knew immediately, uh-oh, we need to readjust what we're doing. And that even includes Clemson. And I just thought that those Bowden teams of the 90s became not only a standard by which, hey, wins and losses, they were, what, 70-2, I think was the mark that they put in the ACC play.
Yep.
And while Clemson's gone on this great run here during this last 4 or 5 years, I mean, I just thought Florida State was light years ahead of how the game was being played with athletes and skill positions on the perimeter and everything else, that the league had to get caught up. I think right now what Clemson's doing is against a much better conference from top to bottom than what Florida State did in the 90s versus who was in the league at that particular time. It's not taking any greatness away from either one because Bowden's teams in the 90s were awesome. And what Dabo's been doing here the last 5, 6 years within this college football playoff have been sensational in the ACC. So, again, we're talking about the elite of the elite comparisons here. The Florida State of the 90s and this new Clemson era, these are special, special times.
Well, I guess the obvious question in response to that would be, even if the ACC is a better football conference now than it was when Florida State was ripping it apart in the 90s, is there a similar reckoning going on right now through the rest of the ACC? Because my goodness, like, who is the obvious candidate to finish second? Like, who's the biggest threat to Clemson, not just in 2019 from the ACC, but over the next 5 years?
Well, I think that everybody in the league is sitting there going, hey, listen, if we want to be a player in college football, forget the talk, we're going to really do some walking. If we want to be a player in the ACC, we do not have to look far to find out what the standard is. And the standard's in Death Valley, Clemson, South Carolina. And, you know, with the way Dabo's recruiting, the way he develops players, the fan base, which is incredibly passionate, it's amazing to me you know, how many Clemson fans were in Dallas at the Cotton Bowl? How many fans were out in the Bay Area? You know, how many folks showed up in the rain in Charlotte for an ACC championship again and again and again? I mean, that now becomes the standard. What are they doing in Clemson, and how do we catch them? And that's what the league did in the 90s when they looked at Florida State and the stadium and the uniforms and the chant. I mean, they had everything going on, right? That's what exactly is taking place right now. And do I see somebody like ready to pounce on 2019? Well, you know, listen, Syracuse has played Clemson tough the last 2 years. The Tigers have to go up there early in the dome. Do I think Syracuse has better players than the Clemson? No, they don't. Nobody in the league does. So how do you catch them? Well, the only way you're going to catch them is to go out and start getting really, really great talent. And if you don't have great talent, I don't like your chances to beat Clemson. Now, you may get them once every now and then because it just happens. It's college football. But until you can start matching up what they're putting on the field, everybody's going to play catch up. And right now, Dabo is just doing it better than anybody else in the league, period.
Want to introduce a new sponsor to the Clemson Dubcast, Harris Flooring America. Very happy to have them aboard. Scott Junkins and the folks over there at Harris Flooring in Anderson. Family owned and operated since 1947. They offer a unique shopping experience through value in their services, developing the right product solutions for your home or business, and delivering on their promises. They serve residential and commercial segments. And most of all, most interesting of all, they have provided work at Clemson University, a lot of projects over there, including the football operations facility. They were heavily involved in that. Also, Memorial Stadium, some upgrades there. In addition to that, in Greenville with the Greenville Drive, BMW as well. Also, a lot of expertise for you homeowners out there, floor-to-ceiling design capabilities. We're going to have a lot more to share about Harris Flooring in forthcoming episodes, but for right now, you can find them online at flooringamerica-anderson.com or by phone, 864-642-6183, Harris Flooring America. These are big Clemson supporters, and really happy to have them aboard of the Dubcast. Well, there are some things under the surface a little bit that, if I'm in the ACC office, I mean, Clemson shouldn't give a rip about the rest of the ACC being competitive because nothing has been denied them so far with them dominating the ACC. But if I'm in the ACC office and I want, I guess, more competitive balance or a legit challenger, more excitement, I am worried about the next, not just 2019 season, but the next five seasons and beyond, because you look at, you mentioned talent. Man, if you look at the acquisition of five-star recruits in the ACC and how that's distributed, how that has been distributed over the last 4 to 5 years, man, it is all Clemson and Florida State and Miami, and nobody else is even close or even in the galaxy. And then on top of that, with Clemson's assistant coaches' raises that they got, I guess, a week ago, they are now, at worst, second nationally in assistant coaches pay, and maybe first because Ohio State's staff compensation has yet to be sorted out and publicized. But you look at the rest of the ACC and it's like the best example, Clemson's strength coach, Joey Batson, got $100,000 raise to $600,000. NC State's highest paid assistant at last check was Dave Huxtable at $600,000. And so, I mean, it's obvious that everybody else in the ACC has a long way to go, but I guess my point is when you see some of these other trends and issues that maybe lurk beneath the surface, like the lack of five stars elsewhere, and then the lack of that total commitment that you see out of Clemson with its willingness to pay its coaches, I think ominous times are ahead, and it's only... it will probably get worse before it gets better in terms of the rest of the ACC.
Larry, what is it? What do you, when you walk into the Clemson facilities, what's the thing you see planted all over the place? Best is the standard, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. I mean, so if you are someone in the Atlantic Coast Conference and you say, listen, I want to be great in football. Well, guess what? Here is the standard. Now, if you want to be a factor in terms of if we want to be in the college football playoff, We want to be in the ACC championship game, winning that every year. We're going to go to major bowl games. Even in down years, we're going to be in the New Year's Day six. If you're going to be that guy, you know exactly what you've got to go to obtain because it's in your own league. And again, I don't think Clemson's going to put it in neutral and wait for anybody to catch up. So you got to go catch them, much like the rest of the ACC had to go catch Florida State in the 90s and beyond. And, you know, they've become one of the guys when it comes to, hey, when you make a short list of who are the football powers in college football as we see it today, if you do not have the name Clemson on your short list of three, you're either an idiot, you're stupid, or you're biased. You're one of the three because it has become the standard. And so that's what it is. I do think, though, when you start talking about ACC football, though, top to bottom, and I think if you put John Swofford on Truth Serum, he would tell you the league desperately, desperately needs another team. Clemson has gotten there, right? Even I think if we had this same conversation a year ago, you would have thought, well, based on what we're going into in the 2018 season, and I know Clemson's going to be really good, but is Miami ready to take the step up? Is Florida State and Virginia Tech two teams I can count on being top 15 teams? The answer to all that would have been yes a year ago. Ironically, Miami, Florida State, Virginia Tech had lousy years based on expectations and what they delivered. Those three teams in particular have to be good for the league. And again, in terms of respect nationally, we know Clemson's a given now, but can Miami, Florida State, Virginia Tech, and maybe somebody on Tobacco Road would be NC State or North Carolina, can they join in the mix? Can Virginia and Bronco Mendenhall get this thing turned around and get on a run and pick up momentum after their 28-0 win against South Carolina? I mean, the ACC desperately needs one of those other five teams or more to be a 10-2 real threat to Clemson on the other side. It's really a missing piece right now of the ACC football puzzle, and that needs to happen.
I've been saying this for years. The ACC's biggest problem football-wise has always been and will always be compared to the SEC, and you got to compare them, is the SEC. How many SEC schools have administrations and donors and fans who every single day of every year are thinking, how do we get better in football?
Exactly.
How many fans in the SEC, if their local carrier in Podunk Town, Alabama, doesn't pick up the SEC network, will they burn the place down? And then compare that to the cultures in the ACC. You just can't manufacture that.
That's right. Well, I think you've got that in the ACC in hoops, just because much like SEC football, it goes upon generation upon generation upon generation. And you've seen success in terms of Final Fours and national championships and deep runs in the tournament and ACC championship banners. But as far as football is concerned, you're exactly right. And that's why I said earlier to you, you know, the SEC is the standard for everybody, whether it be the ACC, the Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12, you fill in the blank, because they have given you that as the blueprint of light. Here's how you get measured. Now, some years you're better than those guys. Not often, but some years. So that becomes the standard. You got to go after that if you want to be truly in the conversation on a consistent basis. So the ACC's got to get better in that department. And I really do think the onus is not on Clemson, because they've proven it and where we are today having this conversation, but the Miamis and the Florida States and the Virginia Techs and the North Carolinas and NC States and Virginias, those six teams right there, a couple of them have to have breakthrough years in which they can consistently give you 9 or 10+ wins every year, and that you can see them in the top 15, in the top 20, balloting for ACC titles, going to New Year's Day six bowls. That has to happen for the ACC to be in the conversation every year with an SEC, et cetera, et cetera. So that's exactly right.
Pack, how long have you been at SiriusXM?
Let me get my days right. I left WFNZ in the primetime of the Pac-Man show in 2010. So I've been with, this is what, 9 years now with SiriusXM?
Okay. And what are the old folks up to, like QCB and those folks who were with you on primetime?
You know, there's Q is still doing some stuff here in Charlotte. He's a stand-up comedian. You know, the cast of characters that were on that show, from co-hosts to callers and stuff, I'll bump into from time to time. But I've been so busy with the new ACC morning show on the ACC channel that's just gotten developed a year ago. And between 3 hours in the morning and 3 hours in the afternoon, I'll normally come up for air and maybe a bite to eat at lunch and then get right back to work. So I have no life, Larry, to be honest with you. It's all I do is read all day, and then I listen for 6 hours on the radio and occasionally give an opinion. So that is my world. So those guys, those were great times. Those are awesome shows. We had so much fun with all that stuff. But, time moves on, man. You go on to the next project. But most of those guys are doing pretty well from the last time I saw all of them.
That show just grabbed you. Like, it had such a unique mix of, it was good humored, it was fast paced, it was informative, lots of guests. I mean, did it just grow into that more organically, or did you have that in mind, I guess, from the beginning?
All the above. Just like the Southern Fried Football Tour, spurred off and turned into a company out of that. And the vision of what we thought we were going to do, it was the perfect wave back in the late 90s when sports talk radio was starting to become, a little more accepted with terrestrial radio and all that kind of stuff. And it was really the perfect storm. I mean, Charlotte was the perfect melting pot of ACC, SEC, Big Ten fans. Sports talk radio was starting to hit big. It was the right timing. We had the right cast of characters. It just was worked. It just right place, right time kind of thing. And that thing morphed into a crazy, crazy run, but it was so much fun. And those 13 years felt like it went by in about a day and a half. It really did. It was awesome.
I guess you heard the news about the South Carolina radio network basically being dumped. Yeah. And that includes Phil Kornblut, who was an institution for, 35 years. What is your take on traditional radio, sports talk? I mean, obviously you're no longer on it. So there were some issues there that prevented your successful show from continuing. Do you have any industry thoughts on that?
I hate it for Phil and that, but that's, the world that we live in now in terrestrial radio, which is very different than where I am now in satellite radio with Sirius XM. It's morphed much like we have seen with newspapers. 20 years ago, you couldn't wait to wake up in the morning and get your hands on a newspaper and read the sports columns or whatever the case may be. And all of a sudden, we got a thing called an iPhone, and that changed the newspaper business. And I think you've seen that kind of trickle down now into terrestrial radio where, hey, we're all getting our news, whether it be through Twitter or social media on your phone. You got instant access to anything you want, anytime you want it, as opposed to, hey, I got to wait till a packet's on in the afternoons at 3 o'clock. So the world's changed. And, you've seen that in the newspaper world. You've seen that in magazines. You're starting to see that now, I think, in terrestrial radio, especially AM radio. And, advertisers are spending money digitally now as opposed to, hey, how much do I get for a 30-second spot on an AM or FM station or billboards or putting in a newspaper? So the world has changed, and you got to change with it. And, Phil had a great run, and I'm sure he's still doing some stuff down in Columbia. But does it surprise me to see all this stuff kind of go by the wayside? No, it doesn't. You got to go with the changes of the times and try to be one step ahead of it. And it's one of the reasons where when I left WFNZ, I could see this thing coming. I could just see the revenues were being changed and morphed into different things. And there was less onus put on the quality of the work of your show as opposed to that, which made me sick because you're working so hard to do a great product and they just simply didn't care. So you just kind of stay one step ahead of the game. And that's why I left, back in 2010. I kind of saw where Sirius Radio was going with satellite, and we were going with the latest acquisition of Pandora. I mean, it's just a completely different universe now than it was 20 years ago when it comes to media. And again, I think that if you can stay ahead of the times and kind of feel changes coming, you can at least address that ahead of time and not get swallowed up. So it doesn't surprise me to see what happened with the South Carolina Network, but there will still be niches, and you got to find those and then try to maximize it the best you can.
So on FNZ, you would go into a station and everybody would congregate there, whereas your current model, you just do it from your house. You have a little recording contraption you take everywhere, right?
Larry, I swear to you, I can paint the picture that I am eating grapes and being fed by Playboy Playmates. All right. I can paint a picture.
I'm on the way.
That you, yeah, here you go. I can paint the picture that, man, that Mark Packer must be living on top of the Taj Mahal. Let me tell you, I am right now in the bottom of my basement. I have two dogs, Chester, a 10-year Cockapoo, and Fuller, who's a 4-year rescue lab, at my feet. I could be wearing a baseball hat and a pair of underwear, and you would never know. And I'm doing two national shows, and the piece of equipment that I do it with is about the size of a woman's shoes box. And I've got a couple of computers. I can draw up any phone call that somebody calls into the show or get any information I need for the program. And like I said, all day, all I do is read. I read and make notes, and eventually it's time for the show, and you go up there and you do 3 hours of entertainment, and you entertain the masses. But the amount of the overhead for me is, my commute is about a 20-minute step right down the steps. I go into the basement with the dogs, wake up bright and early, 4 a.m. every day, and at 7 a.m. we do our ACC show, and at 4 in the afternoon we do our off-campus show on ESPNU. And off we go. And I walk 20 steps up to get lunch or 20 steps up to get dinner, and we do it all over again. But, you know, there is no overhead. I don't have a staff of, 25 salespeople. I don't get there's no office politics. I mean, I've eliminated all that stuff by going to SiriusXM. And that's one of the things that was an appeal to me back in 2010. I could just see the changes coming with terrestrial radio and what they were doing from a revenue perspective. And it's like, you know what, this thing is kind of dying at the vine, and I need to get off of it and start something new. And that's exactly why I made the change.
Is there a time of day, I guess probably at the end of a day, or a time of the week or month where you maybe have a routine of saying, okay, I got to disconnect, and just so you're fresh for the next day or the next week or whatever?
Oh, sure. And in fact, what I do, to be honest with you, when I get out of bed at 4 a.m, and I don't sleep much, I'm just one of these natural 2 hours, 3 hours is plenty of sleep for me.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I don't sleep at all. And so when I go walk the dogs at 4 a.m., it really is like a cleansing of the soul for me. It's like my mind's fresh, and what I watched from last night, if I jotted down a note watching a game or something, it's there on the notepad. But I walk the dogs, and that's like the cleansing of my mind that, hey, I got a clean slate. I can create anything I want today. And I take that approach every day. Every day is a brand new day that I can create whatever I want. There are no strings attached. And so when I walk the dogs at 4 a.m., that's really when I just clean my mind of everything. And then when we walk in, the dogs get their water, they go sound, they go back to sleep. I go to work. And that's kind of like, hey, it's a blank canvas, now let me go draw something. And that's what I create. And at 7 a.m., then we go do it. And then when this show ends at 7 a.m., at 10 a.m., I'll find out what's going on with my wife or what's going on with the girls, who, by the way, are both at Clemson, and kind of get caught up on some of the news of the day. And then I'll go for a walk at noon or 12:30. And that basically becomes the same thing. I cleanse my mind again. That's a totally different audience, a different show. And I come back home by 1 o'clock, and then I get cranked up again for 3 hours or more news and notes that I'm working on, or some crazy ideas or some stat I've come up with. And at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, time for off campus on ESPNU, and we do it all over again. And, and then I clean my mind when I get done with the show, because I go up and see my wife, get caught up for the day. We have lunch, or excuse me, have dinner, and then we get to work again. So, I mean, it's just that the cycle is so routine now that I don't think anything of it. It's just kind of it's like putting on your socks and shoes.
It's so fascinating. You mentioned two of the most old school things in taking a walk and reflecting, just for even 10 or 15, 20 minutes, and writing stuff down. I'm a big believer in both of those as well. But in today's society, and particularly media people, you see so many people who, you got 10 windows up on your computer as you're trying to follow a game. You're on Twitter, you're interacting with these people, and then oh by the way, you got your phone sitting there buzzing with text. And just the fundamental act of reflection, of putting everything down and spending 10 or 15 minutes just to think, just like you said, and the first thing in the morning, that's, a very creative time for you, as it is for me. And then writing stuff down. I mean, that is the source of having a good show. I think it's a source of having good stories, because good stories are the product of good ideas. And anyway, it just doesn't seem like, it seems like there's not a lot of that out there nowadays with the way we both consume and produce our news and analysis and all that stuff.
Well, I'll be honest with you. Every show I've ever done, from Primetime with the Pac-Man to what I'm going to do this afternoon on Off Campus, I have every show written down on a notepad. Every show note, everything. And eventually, one of these days, when I finally get sick and tired of doing all this, I'll write a book. And I can't tell you how many times I will go back into my folders. I will have all this stuff stored. My wife laughs at me. She goes, "What are you doing with all these notepads?" And I'm like, "Well, this is basically 20-some-odd years of radio shows." And just out of fun, sometimes I will go back and just pick one of the boxes out and just pull up whatever the date is and go, "Oh, man, I remember that show on February the 17th, 2004. And I remember that guest." And I'll have show notes. And, you know, if somebody says something funny, or, you know, I hear great, I love words. You know, I'll write down words all the time that intrigue me. And I'll keep a little red book that I carry with me at all times, where I have some just crazy thoughts or words or a great saying or a slogan or something. I mean, there's all kind of abstract thoughts in this little red book that I carry with me all the time. I just think it's, you know, and I do social media and I respond on Twitter and I respond to emails and all that stuff still. But sometimes you just need, you know, a half an hour to yourself where you can just basically, you know, reboot. And I do that at least twice a day for both of these shows. And I found it to be really helpful for me. It may not work for somebody else, but that's just the way I like to roll. But it's kind of cool, though, to look back at some of these old notepads and you see stuff, and I'll circle it and put a star on it, like, "Hey, come back to this topic in next year," or tweak it in some way. And I can't tell you how often I use that. It happens all the time.
What's the most difficult time of year for you work-wise, if there is one?
I think the toughest time, to be honest with you, is the transition that we just went through from the middle of January to the start of February. To me, it's the toughest, because you go from the euphoric end of a football season, whether Clemson wins it or not, so that's almost irrelevant. But the end of the football season, it's kind of like, no, it's, I mean, to me, the college football season is the only sport where when the season ends, you can't believe it's over. Like it goes by so fast that you're like, man, we need like another 3 or 4 weeks and I won't complain anymore, but it ends. And then all of a sudden for us on Off Campus on ESPNU, literally the next day or two, we're in the hoops, and it's almost like, man, the basketball season's already 2.5 months old, and the vast majority of America doesn't even know it yet. Now they do in pockets in Chapel Hill and at Duke and at, you know, Bloomington, Indiana, or Sparty, or, you know, that kind of stuff. But the vast majority of America still has the NFL playoffs on the brain, or, hey, can you believe that Clemson beat Alabama by 4 touchdowns and all that kind of stuff. But you make this transition, and that middle of January to the early part of February, to me, is really the hardest snapshot of the year, because people still want to hang on to football, but yet you know you've got to move on and kind of set the stage of what's going to happen eventually coming up with March Madness. And I know there'll probably be some people go, "Well, what do you talk about in the middle of May and June?" Well, to me, that's the fun time. That's when you get to be really creative, because quite frankly, unless some player or some coach does something unbelievably stupid, there really isn't any talking point. You got to create stuff. And to me, given the personality and what I like to do, that's the fun time of the year when you think it's the deadest time of the year in the summer. That's when it's fun. But the hardest transition is the end of football to immediately jumping in the deep end of the pool with college hoops.
Do you think college basketball is hurting itself by the meat of its regular season basically coinciding with the most exciting time of college football season?
No question. I've said it for years and years and years. I think college basketball should be a one semester sport. And that coming from the loins of Billy Packer living in Tobacco Road, to make a statement like that, I could probably be shot by some people for sale with a pilot and all that good stuff. I've always thought that, hey, college football and the NFL have become so powerful and so popular that other sports better beware, because when you go up against it, you're going to get swallowed whole. That's true whether we're talking the NBA, college hoops, NASCAR, the PGA Tour, tennis. You name it. It does not matter. Football rules in this country. And, college hoops, I still love watching it, but it gets lost in November and December and most of January because the rest of America is dialed into the college football playoffs or the NFL playoffs. And that's just the real world. And so, hey, we're still having March Madness in April. So what difference does it make if it's the first weekend of April or the last weekend of April? You can still have your season January through April. And if, the big-time schools want to play games in, December in the Maui tournament or a great, a Big Ten ACC challenge, yeah, that's fine. That's fine. But really, the season could be conducted in January, February, March, and end at the end of April, and we'd all be fine. We'd all be just fine.
I totally agree. And it's not just the coinciding of the schedules. It's the transition going from college football playoff, the drama and the stakes and the bigness of it, I guess, for lack of a better word. And then it's like, we got NC State at Miami in front of college basketball in front of 150 people.
Yeah, I'm with you. You're preaching the choir on this. Again, I'm sure folks in Lexington, Kentucky and Louisville would totally disagree that, hey, we want to see it every day. And I get that. People in Duke and North Carolina would say the same thing. Totally understand that. But that doesn't represent the whole country. I think the country is dialed into football. And, whether your team is 2-10 or 10-2, people care. People watch. People talk about it. I don't get the same sense that people are living and dying on a Tuesday night game in the middle of December, whether it involves two blue bloods or two great leagues getting after each other. I mean, yeah, you'll watch it, you'll get into it. But in terms of what we do for a living, it does not move the meter like it does in football. Not even close.
Last question. You mentioned your daughters are at Clemson. You went to Clemson, graduated from there. Your profession, though, demands that you view things in a clinical and dispassionate way. And I think you do a really good job of doing that. But what has this meant to you just with your background, Clemson having done what it's done with the two national championships?
Well, I will say this. I have never been more proud of my alma mater than I have been the last couple of years. And it's not because they won the championship, but it's because my girls have had such a great experience at Clemson. And they've been able to enjoy what I enjoyed back as a freshman back in 1981 when Clemson won the national championship. You're like, man, we ought to do this every year. And of course, you find out how difficult that is. But that to me has been kind of a full circle. That's been really, really cool. And the other thing, too, is this is kind of a fitting way to end this interview, because you mentioned about finding Dabo Swinney, and I did. He's, filled with confetti. When Clemson won the national championship 2 years ago, and Hunter Renfrow catches the pass from Deshaun Watson, place goes nuts. I remember doing those same interviews, and I went back out on the field in Tampa before I left to go back. And again, it must have been 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and my daughter, Gigi, was spending the night with me at the hotel because she couldn't find a place to stay, and she just wanted to be at the game to experience it. And I remember going out on the field that night when the game finally ended, hours upon hours upon hours after the game, and there was still confetti on the field. And I remember grabbing a handful of confetti, and I stuck it in my pocket. And I remember getting back to the hotel because I had to wake her up at 5 a.m. so she could take a flight to get back to Clemson to go to class that morning. And when I got back to the hotel, I turned on the lights. And it was 4:30 in the morning. She's like, Dad, what are you doing? I said, well, you got to wake up in half an hour. And I grabbed that confetti and I threw it on her. I said, congratulations, you're a national champion. And she said, Dad, you're being cheesy, da da da. She made fun of me, but I loved it. So here we are. We fast forward the clock to the Bay Area. I find Dabo Swinney out there in the middle field. We conduct the interview. We get done. And I look down on the ground and there was all this confetti. And I remember reaching down, just like I did 2 years prior, I grabbed a bunch of it. I stuck it in my pocket and I put it in my briefcase. Now, our youngest daughter, Emerson, did not make the trip all the way across country, but I couldn't wait to see her when she came back a couple of weeks ago from taking a weekend break from studies. And she walked home and I remember her said, hey, I got something for you. She goes, what's that? And I reached in, I put it in an envelope and I said, here's the national championship confetti. And she said, oh, that is so cool, Dad. And I'm like, that to me was the fitting kind of the connection of remembering being in school at Clemson, winning the national championship in 81. Our oldest daughter has now won two in 16 and 18, and our youngest has now won one in 18. But I could not be more proud of the institution for how great it's become academically, because it's been a trickle-down effect with all this stuff, and also to see Clemson football back in all its glory. And I say that now as an alum, but as far as doing the show, hey, when I do a show, I put the headset on, and if your team plays well, I'm going to love on you. If your team stinks it up, I'm going to get on your case. And that's true whether you got a tiger paw on your helmet or you don't. And but, you know, in the back of my mind, I will always root for them. I hope they win every game they play. And I'm proud to call myself a Clemson alum.
That's great stuff, and truly special moments with you and your daughters. Mark Packer, wonderful interview. I know my listeners are going to really enjoy it. Appreciate you taking some of your very valuable time and giving it to us.
Larry, always a pleasure. And if you don't mind, I'm going to go take a nice long walk.
hey, from my basement to yours, thank you so much.
It. Anytime. Take care.
All right, that was a lot of fun. Man, I say this a lot with a lot of my guests, but that could have gone on for another hour, 2 hours. But Mark had another interview he had to do, and we're kind of busy over here in our basement too. So thanks to Mark for indulging us as long as he did. Also, thanks to our sponsors, title sponsor, Parham Smith and Arch and Hold Law Firm in downtown Greenville. They have those koozies that I've been seeing out there. Go by there and pick one up if you don't already have one. Also, Tandem Payment in Greenville. And our newest sponsor, Harris Flooring America. Thanks to all y'all out there for making this a part of your listening routine. And I guess one final shameless plug here. If you don't already have the Dabo's Dynasty book, you can go to clemsonfootballbooks.com. We'll take care of you there. Next podcast, as usual, scheduled to drop next week. I guess we'll maybe make it every Thursday from now on, or until I feel like doing something different. So everybody have a great rest of the week and weekend, and be safe. Cheers.